Hello, I'm Anne Hurst, the terrified writer, and welcome to the Life is Scary podcast. You know, sometimes our fears, doubts, and insecurities can get a bit above themselves. They can take it a bit too far to the point where they get in the way and stop us doing what we want to do creatively. This podcast unpicks what makes us scared, explores how we deal with our fears, and how it's possible to turn them to our advantage to live a full, fulfilled, creative life. Life is Scary is proud to be unsponsored, so nah. Welcome to episode 4. Hi, welcome back. It's just me today. No guest, but that's okay. We've got loads to talk about today. I say we, me. I'm in here with Fred, so I don't think he's got much to say because he's just fast asleep on the floor. I have got a bit of a sore throat today. Let me tell you this, right? My youngest son is on a school trip and I had to get to school for 1:30 in the morning. What kind of a time is that for a school trip? I just don't understand. So I sound like I've smoked about 1,000 cigarettes. That's such a thing a non-smoker would say. 1,000 cigarettes. It's unimaginable. I sound like I've been smoking. Sorry. I'm running on no sleep and woken up with a terrible lurgy of coughing and sore throat and all of that. So yeah, what's been going on? Well, this week I have been mostly worrying about not sleeping. I'm an insomniac. I don't know if there are any other insomniacs out there listening to this. I know there are plenty out there, but if you're listening to this, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. It's horrendous. Just that whole thing about staying asleep, especially if you do kind of live on your nerves a little, if you are slightly anxious about stuff anyway, not sleeping really doesn't help. I've tried everything and I would welcome any suggestions whatsoever, any. I think I've tried them all. Yeah, it's like having a bit of a hangover, but without the benefit of having gone out and had a great time the night before. So what have I tried? Well, yeah, meditation. I have a bunch of like sleep aid things. I've got sleep rescue remedy. I've got herbal Nitol. I've got normal Nitol. I've got pillow spray. That seems to be, it smells lovely, but I don't think it helps me sleep. It's not the getting to sleep, it's the staying asleep. Here's something that happened, though. My problem is I go to bed, I'm fine. I go to sleep, fine. But I wake up at about 3 o'clock and quite often I'm awake for a good couple of hours. Now, last week, I thought to myself, I've got a credit on Audible, so I'm going to download a book on Audible. And the first book that popped up on my Audible recommended list was How We Sleep, by a guy called, hang on, I'm just going to look it up. I've got him here. It's The Science of Sleep. And his name, Matthew Walker is his name. I thought, well, this is interesting. There's obviously a reason that's come up, so I'll get that. So I downloaded it. Brilliant. I pressed play. And this is what I heard. I'm just going to read out this extract. Chapter 1, To Sleep. Do you think you got enough sleep this past week? Can you recall the last time you woke up without an alarm clock, feeling refreshed, not needing caffeine? If the answer to either of these questions is no, you're not alone. I'm thinking, great, I know, this is very reassuring. 2/3 of adults throughout all developed nations fail to obtain the recommended 8 hours of nightly sleep. 2/3! I'm in the majority, I'm thinking. This is very reassuring. Then he goes on, I doubt you are surprised by this fact. I don't know. But you may be surprised by the consequences. See that word consequences, that immediately. So anyway, still trying to go to sleep. He carries on. Routinely, sleeping less than 6 or 7 hours a night demolishes your immune system, more than doubling your risk of cancer. Insufficient sleep is a key lifestyle factor determining whether or not you will develop Alzheimer's disease. Inadequate sleep, even moderate reductions for just 1 week, disrupts blood sugar levels so profoundly that you would be classified as pre-diabetic. Short sleeping increases the likelihood of your coronary arteries becoming blocked and brittle, setting you on a path towards cardiovascular disease, stroke, and congestive heart failure. Okay. I'm now not relaxed at all, and also not slightly dropping off to sleep. I am now eyes pinged wide open, sweating buckets, thinking, I am going to die in about a week. He goes, sleep disruption further contributes to all major psychiatric conditions, including depression, anxiety, and suicidality. Which, is that even a word? Is it? I don't know. Oh my actual God. It's a fascinating book, I'm absolutely sure. But do not listen to this or read this when you're about to go to bed or if you're an insomniac. This is horrific. I mean, it might actually have some very positive messages in there, which actually, I hope it does. I have actually downloaded the book because I am assured that there's some advice in there. But, oh, for crying out loud. I know how important it is to hook your readers in very early on. I understand about that. Oh man, no, this is not good. Not for the people that can't sleep. Start with something positive. So yeah, I spent all night anxious. Yeah, so it didn't, and getting no sleep did increase my anxiety. Thanks very much. And I got no sleep that night. Thank you again, Matthew Blumen Walker. I will read it. I do think it is meant to be an excellent book. And this guy is passionate about sleep. I'm passionate about sleep. I just don't have any. I really love it. I love sleep so much. I just can't get any. So yeah, that's what's been worrying me this week. But yes, on the flip side, there is an app and it's called Calm. And it's one of these subscription apps. Oh, that's it. Oh God, you have to switch it off because... I have to switch it off because as soon as you put the app on, it starts making this river sound. It's really loud as well, which isn't great for a sleep app. But what that's got is it's got stories in it. It's got bedtime stories, and some of them are read by Stephen Fry. Now, I can heartily recommend having a bedtime story read to you by Stephen Fry. It's like having a big bear cuddling you, in a good way, a friendly bear, not one that's going to maul you. There's also meditation techniques on there and stuff. What else has happened? I write little notes. I don't write a script. Can you tell? Can you tell this isn't scripted? Surely not. Yeah, so I write these little notes and I've written one here and it looks like I've written micro shitting, but I'm pretty sure it's not that. No, I think micro-shitting is something different entirely. What I'm actually talking about is micro-shifting. It's nothing new, but I was reminded about it in an article on Medium this week by someone called Brianna Wiest or Wiest. I think it's Wiest or Viest. Anyway, it's Brianna and then Wiest. Who says in her article that meaningful change doesn't usually require a breakthrough, but small regular tweaks and adjustments can have a major impact on long-term results. I think it's a helpful thing to remember this if we're stuck or if we feel blocked or overwhelmed. It's especially relevant if you're trying something new. Going back to writing again, the very idea of writing a whole book feels monumental. I mean, it's just too much, isn't it? But if you break it down, sorry about this, I'm going to have to apologise about my voice. I've got this awful sore throat and cough, and I think my voice sounds really strange. Anyway, the idea of writing a whole book does feel a little bit like having to climb a mountain. But if you break it down, things can look very different. Books don't get written overnight. You've got to remember that. They happen over time. And every writer takes as long as they take. Everyone's different. Setting daily or weekly targets is much more realistic, much less daunting, and the result is just the same. So if you write 500 words a day, give or take, in a year you'll have a first draft. It's those daily regular habits that count. That's the micro shift. The shifts can and should be tiny, barely detectable in some cases. Meditation, for example, is one of those things. It's so good for you. It's so beneficial. It's been proven to reduce stress and improve mental health. And I know a lot of people who've tried it. I have tried it so many times. And I do actually enjoy it when I'm in the zone. But after a while, I just stop doing it regularly because I just think it takes up too much time. And, you know, you're sitting there thinking, what shall I do? Shall I meditate? No, I'll go and get on with something else instead. I mean, it sounds silly, but it's true. If it's not sustainable, you won't do it. Well, Brianna West says that if you want to meditate, start with 30 seconds and then build up from there. It's the same. I mean, 30 seconds is nothing, you know, but if you can sit and just be still and be in your own mind and just be in the moment for 30 seconds to a minute, even, that is going to it's going to start to help. It's the same with health. You know, exercising for 5 or 10 minutes a few times a week rather than going to the gym for an hour is better than nothing. And like with food, you know, giving up sugar and fat and coffee and chocolate, it's miserable. But if you make small changes, just reducing intake over time, that'll should be just as effective and you'll be happier because it won't feel like deprivation. Same with reading. You know, a lot of people say they don't have time to read. Well, just read a page at a time. Goodness knows, when I go to bed at night, I can manage probably about a page or so before I drop off. When I do most of my reading, actually, is in those 2 hours when I'm wide awake between bloody 3 and 5 o'clock in the sodding morning. Anyway, the list goes on and you get the gist. Ultimately, the idea is you make tiny, weeny, seemingly insignificant adjustments so that eventually it becomes a habit. And it's a habit. It's that habit that creates the change. Oh, this reminds me of another thing. I read at the weekend about a new trend, which you've probably heard of. You may not have done this new wave of reducitarianism. I know, right? It's not about giving up meat completely, but a reducitarian will reduce their meat consumption. And the idea is that reducing meat consumption, if everyone proactively did this, the impact on the environment would be significant. Can you imagine the effect of that? What a brilliant global example of the power of microshifting if everybody who ate meat just ate a little bit less. And I only bring this up really because the word itself, as I read it, I immediately went to tell my husband because I knew he'd have absolute apoplexy when he heard the word. It's one of those words that you can imagine, can't you? Someone must have come up with it. They'd be so smug, so pleased with themselves, wouldn't they? Oh, I'm a reducitarian. Because it's a new word, but the meaning is kind of obvious enough that it doesn't need an explanation. So you can just kind of drop it in. I just imagine this like really uber cool hip kid in like Hoxton casually dropping into their vegan mates. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, I've been a reducitarian for like the last year. And their mates don't even need to ask because they know what it is. They can tell what it is. But they're thinking, oh, shit, I wish I'd thought of that before I gave up steak completely. And I now live on this frickin' quinoa and sprouts shit. Bollocks. Yeah, anyway, that made me laugh. So reducitarianism. I mean, I don't eat meat now, but if I did, I gave it up because I stopped enjoying it. But if I was still enjoying it, I would probably just reduce it a little bit. I know a lot of people are doing that. Anyway, that made me laugh. So I kind of touched on an aspect of microshifting this week on the blog. So it's all quite relevant. On the blog, by the way, theterrifiedwriter.com. Go along, subscribe. If you subscribe, you get posts straight into your inbox. How great is that? The whole point of this blog post was that it's only ever now. And if you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it? It was really to get people thinking and maybe get them to question why they haven't done the thing they want to do, why they keep putting it off, what's been stopping them. That's all it was. It was a thought piece, really. And it was a little bit, you know, a little bit sort of tongue in cheek. And I think most people did take it that way. But I did get a comment from someone on social media, somebody I've met. She's a lovely woman. It was weird because she said that the piece kind of panicked her. It was all to do with the fact that she gets overwhelmed and anxious by the thought of now and the fact that it's everywhere and, you know, you get overwhelmed. Everybody's different. And she clearly has an issue with this. I can tell you this because it was a public comment and you can go and read it and you can read my response as well. Anyway, I think most people took it the other way, but it got me thinking. My immediate reaction was, that's not what I was intending. That's not where I was coming from. But it made me think, you know, everything we do, everything we put out there, whether it's writing, whether it's a blog, whether it's this podcast, for example, the way that I see it and the way that I put it out there, somebody else will take it differently. And initially, I was worried that somebody was upset by something I'd written. In fact, I don't think she was upset. All it did was that the piece triggered something in her. She observed that and she let me know. And I think that's great because that was good feedback. The reason I'm mentioning it is because I have, on occasion, I've not written something or I've not posted something because I was worried about getting adverse reactions. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not a controversial person. I certainly don't go out there to provoke. I'm not political in any way on social media or my blogs or anything like that. I keep it very sort of benign almost. That's just the way that I am. I write stuff that I think and I hope will interest people, possibly inspire them and maybe even motivate them to be creative if that's what they want to do. So even when I got this comment, I was like, oh my God, I didn't mean that. I hope you're okay. Don't be upset and all of that. In fact, I gave a very considered response. And actually, I thought afterwards, do you know what? It's fine. Someone disagreed with me and that's okay. Everyone survived. Everyone survived and we're all okay. You know, when we put ourselves out there with our creative work, whether it's blogging or writing or even on social media, you do open yourself up to criticism. But I don't think, certainly for me now, I don't think I'm going to let that, the thought of that, stop me from doing it. If it is what's stopping you, just don't let it stop you. Because even if someone does come back and they disagree with you or they criticize you, the feeling you get from that won't be as bad as you think. Actually, the worst place you can go is Twitter anyway. There's so much hatred on Twitter. In fact, there is so much hatred on there that I have decided now, I've made a conscious decision that even if I slightly disagree with anyone on there, I won't comment at all. I actually take an active position to only post kind and positive messages on there. I have disagreed with people on there in the past. It doesn't really make me feel good or bad or anything. And I just thought, no, there's too much hatred. I'm only going to post kind and positive things. It doesn't matter that no one will notice. I mean, I'm telling you, but people won't necessarily notice this. But I know, and that is all that matters. Okay, so we're coming to the end of this because I have garbled on for quite a long time today. And I think it's time for the do something that scares you bit. I should have a jingle for that, shouldn't I? I'm wondering what it is I can do because I've got a very busy weekend ahead. It's very rock star filled, very pop star filled. I'm seeing an excellent band on Friday night in London, going over to that London, the big London, going to Tottenham of all places. It's a bit edgy, isn't it? A bit edgy for me. I'm going to see Drones Club. If you haven't already seen them, go onto Instagram or other social media platforms and check out Drones Club. They are amazing. I'm slightly biased, but that's okay. On Saturday, I'm travelling to Liverpool to go and meet my cousin, and we're going to see Jack White, who I stalk whenever he comes to the UK. I don't know what it is that I can say in advance that I'm going to do that will scare me. Oh, hang on. Actually, I've already said yes to something that does actually scare the hell out of me. And you know what? This is really boring, but I can't tell you what it is. So what I'm going to do, that's great, isn't it? Content, great content. Come to Life is Scary for great content. Anyway, I will update you in episode 5 on how that went, because I think I'll be able to talk about it then. So before I go, I just got to tell you this funny thing. That ping on my phone, this is very rude, but I did get a ping on my phone. I just looked at it and someone has just followed me on Instagram. It's a guy who's followed me and he's just left a comment on one of my posts. And the thing is, right, the same guy followed me a few weeks ago and left exactly the same quote on a different post of mine. Oh, bless him. You see, the old me might have gone, you know, gone a bit sarky and gone, you said that last time, you bell end. I mean, I wouldn't call him a bell end because that would be cruel. But he's probably going to do exactly that. He'll unfollow me and then he'll come back in a few weeks. So actually, maybe I should say that. I'll say, oh, thanks. Thank you so much. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And yeah, when he comes back with the same comment on a different post. The worst thing would be if he just didn't come back at all. That would be terrible, wouldn't it? Anyway, I hope you'll come back. I hope you'll come back to the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. It's been fun talking to you. And I'm sorry about the state of my voice. I'm going to go and gargle with some lemon and honey. And I will speak to you next time. Bye. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you want to get in touch, you can find me on Instagram at The Terrified Writer or on Twitter at Anne Hirst, A-N-N-H-I-R-S-T, or via The Terrified Writer blog. That's theterrifiedwriter.com. Thanks for listening and speak to you again soon. Bye.